Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
August 18, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this is the show you were looking for. How do I know this? Because you're hearing me say what I'm saying. Anyway, Thursday, second to last broadcast day of the week for the O'Chelly Effect. However, I have no idea what everybody else's shows are doing. So I think Aaron will be live tomorrow night. I guess we'll see. I'm pretty sure Chris has a show for Sunday. Oops, that's next week. Anyway, whatever it is, and we're going to get through it. So happy as usual to have Michael Swanson with me in the first hour on Thursdays. Now, I don't think we had him last week, but this week we got him. And really, really happy because he is the author of The War State and Why the Vietnam War, two books which I do recommend. Actually, I'm going to recut something, I think, for Mike soon related to his books because I want to redo a whole book commercial. But anyway, aside from that, WallStreetWindow.com, obviously. Be in the know. Go to WallStreetWindow.com. It is not just about Wall Street. And, yeah. There is a lot over there, and besides that, Mike's working on some stuff on YouTube, which we talked about the past couple times we got together. But anyway, in the second hour, I think I'm going to take your guys' calls. I heard from Larry Hancock this week, and I'm thinking that he'll be back in a couple of weeks, so I feel good about that. But his absence in the second hour on Thursdays, I did not put in a replacement for Larry, okay, because who could replace Larry Hancock? Ponder that one. Mike Swanson, how you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing good. Glad to hear that Larry will be coming. Looks like Larry's going to be coming back pretty soon. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, from what he said to me, it sounds like, you know, September somewhere in there. I really am looking forward to it. You know, and I'll let him explain what happened there and everything. I mean, I let people know that he had a little bit of trouble and that he's recovering. But, you know, I never like to share people's personal business unless they authorized me to do so. You know what I mean? So, I figure he'll want to talk about that when he comes back. But Larry is just one of those people I'm like just so happy we did not lose, frankly, because I hate it when you lose somebody who has been such a prolific author, a profound influence, you know, on me. Anyway, for me, I'm talking for myself here, Mike. Of course, I know you know Larry well and wish him well as well. But,
well, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, look, the last time we spoke, I talked a little bit about a book that he told me to read.
Right.
About the China's role in the Vietnam War. I mean, he's perhaps one of the most – he could be the most knowledgeable person we know about the national security state and all these kind of topics, quite honestly. And we know a lot of people.
And generally as a historian, Larry is excellent. I mean, modern American history especially – please, I don't know anybody who knows more than Larry. I mean, there's a couple of guys that are, you know, like definitely should probably go on Jeopardy or something, that we know, but very few of them, really are not, or even at the level Larry's at. You know, like the old phrase, like, you know, you see somebody who's forgotten more than somebody knows in a lot of cases. That's like Larry Hancock. So.
Oh, for sure. Well, I thought.
Anyway.
I read a book since we spoke, and I thought I might talk about that a little bit.
Sure.
It's got little tidbits that are kind of interesting. I just started by telling you one little story. On November the 18th, 1961, John F. Kennedy was president. Mm-hmm. That was his first year as president. And he went to Los Angeles to the Hollywood Palladium, the conference, little conference area, mm-hmm. and gave a speech. And this story I never heard before, but people were so angry at him at this moment mm-hmm. in Los Angeles that 3,000 people were picketing outside the building, basically saying that he was a communist.
Right.
Communism is our enemy. That was what some of the signs said. Disarmament is suicide. veto Tito, unmuzzle the military, Kenny must go.
Right.
These are some of the signs. And, you know, I mean, this 3,000 people is a lot of people.
Well, that's what sparked the security concerns. By the way, that incident sparked the security concerns for the next time that Kennedy went to Los Angeles, which I don't know if you remember when people kept talking about, well, what about the plots before Dallas and, you know, what about Chicago and what about Miami?
Yeah.
And you remember me always going, yeah, and Los Angeles, don't forget that. Now, there is not as much evidence for the Los Angeles plot to speak of, let's say, but there were a lot more investigated threats by the Secret Service, and they were especially concentrated in the LA area. And the initial inciting incident that got the Secret Service to have to do that is what you're talking about in 61. So,
well,
yeah.
Here's what happened. And this book isn't about Kennedy. It's a book about a figure named Fred Schwartz.
Okay.
And he read a group. He was a Australian physician, born in 1913. And after the end of World War II, he decided to come to the United States and become an activist for anti-communism. Mm-hmm. And he founded something called the Christian Anti-Communism Crusade. Now,
okay.
There's another group that's got a similar name that was James Hargis's outfit. I mean, the names are almost indistinguishable, but this wasn't that.
Right.
He's another figure that, I think I knew more about him, but what this Fred Schwartz guy did is, as I said, he was an Australian doctor, mm-hmm. and he read a lot of the Marxist and communist literature and books and decided to try to, or he did, confront their arguments, in Australia. And then he came to the United States and organized 5 to 7 day, what he called anti-communism conferences.
Okay.
Which was devoted to, I mean, speakers, you know, going on and on and on, for several days. And the first one of these events he did was in Los Angeles. And one thing that's interesting about this is that anti-communism as a movement, you know, people think of this, the 50s, as Joseph McCarthy, but when McCarthy kind of fell apart, he tried to accuse people in the U.S. Army of being communists, and they had these hearings, and he just didn't have the evidence to back up his charges. And frankly, he was an alcoholic, and
right.
he really didn't catch anybody. He just made charges and got a lot of media attention, and the media gave him the attention because it gave them not – it helped them sell newspapers. TV was just beginning. But his star faded out. He got censored by the Senate. Mm-hmm. And the John Birch Society kind of rose up in his fading away.
Right.
And this Fred Schwartz was an important figure for a couple years. Now, the first event he had was in September. Right before, you know, a month before Kennedy came, and he organized something called the Southern California School of Anti-Communism, and he filled up a 16,000 seat arena. And not only that, the first speaker, these weren't just cranks, or something. Yeah. The first speaker was Ronald Reagan.
Right.
And then he did a second event in Hollywood that was televised in California television. And it had Roy Rogers, John Wayne, James Stewart,
uh-huh.
People like this. And he was getting the financial backing of Walter Knott, who is the founder of Knott's Berry Farm, mm-hmm. which is in the LA area. And he was also a big figure in the John Birch Society, helping to fund it and keep it going. So there are connections between Schwartz and the John Birch Society. And, but he did these sort of, conferences.
Right.
For 2 or 3 years. And people, you know, at one point people are saying like, he gets the people riled up and then they sign up for the John Birch Society. But it's just an interesting little story.
You know, there's a lot more to this than, and nobody has satisfactorily laid out the progression of the, I don't know what to call it. I guess the fringe of the right wing and how it has rotated itself into the mainstream. There's something to be said here because even today there is a weird sort of, I almost think of it as a movement at this point, afoot among people that, support the concept of alternative history, that McCarthy is not like a bad guy. He's right. He was correct. And it's very strange to see these, you know, like, independent, you know, I'm into, alternate history because the mainstream always lies to you. And okay, I agree with that, but then they go into another area and they've decided that McCarthy's a good guy. The John Birch Society, a lot of the stuff that was really incubated in their literature ends up resurfacing over and over again, through other right-wing movements all the way from the time when you and I were kids in the 70s.
I just read, before I read this book, I read a book, about, I got it upstairs, but about the John Birch Society, mm-hmm. and Robert Welch, who founded it.
Right.
And it made some really interesting, points. In one of them is that it was a sort of a biography of Robert Welch. And he was arguing that with McCarthy, he just made a lot of accusations, got a lot of attention.
Right.
But what Robert Welch did in his writings, and he was a nonstop writer, is he kind of made like a pseudo history of communism and, you know, a lot of conspiracy stuff, obviously, but he made arguments to, right. you know, he would have conclusions or whatnot, but he would make all these sort of arguments, whereas McCarthy really didn't do that. So Welch kind of was an intellectual type of person, and people that read his stuff kind of felt like that. And he was, you know, by the accounts of his book, he was highly intelligent. I mean, he's probably a genius,
right?
Frankly. But the other thing about him that this book argues, which is really interesting, is that, you know, when I first, you know, a long time ago, started reading about these figures, the standard narrative in the 90s or early 2000s was that mm-hmm. Robert Welch was real radical and William Buckley opposed him, in the National Review Journal.
Right.
And kind of pushed him out of the conservative movement, by making accusations that he was anti-Semitic and too conspiratorial and this sort of stuff. Well, in reality, one of the interesting things about this book is Welch was born in North Carolina and lived, you know, grew up there. Uh-huh. And if you look at everything he said in his writings, he never says anything, racist. Despite having lived in the South, like, and the civil rights movement was going on. Now, he opposed it not on the basis, I mean, he opposed it on the basis that it was like big government, but not on any sort of racial lines, which was, you know, what most people were doing in the South back then. Mm-hmm. And William Buckley, the book shows that William Buckley, had made all sorts of racist statements,
right,
throughout his entire life. And Welch didn't at all. Now, Welch's problem with the John Birch Society is that a lot of these people in it were heavily anti-Semitic or racist or whatnot. And at times, and some of these were prominent people in it, you know, writers and stuff. And he would purge them out once these people get too controversial or too hot from time to time.
Right.
But from the account of this book, I mean, he was like a control freak running this thing and couldn't delegate authority very well.
Well, see, he was a control freak, and I get it that he never made the blatant remarks, right? He never memorialized that stuff. But here's the thing. If you go with the argument, and I'm not saying that I necessarily do, but I've seen it argued that if you study his writings closely enough, what you find is coded substitutions. Like, instead of talking about the Jews, what he's doing is talking about the international banking. And instead of talking about
I can see that.
Wanting to embrace slavery or wanting to embrace, you know, the idea of Jim Crow in general, instead of doing that, he talks about, well, you know, the Southerners want to protect their way of life. Now, what is the Southern way of life? Can you define that? When you break it all the way down, the older custom of the Southern way of life is, guess what? Based on a paradigm that necessarily involves slavery. So it's always weird to me when people talk about, well, this is, you know, like with the whole, as you remember from a couple of years ago and very near your home, the battles over the battle flag, right? The stars and bars. The Southern battle flag, not even the flag of the Confederacy, mind you, okay? But the thing that we know as the rebel flag, right? What is the point of defending that? Well, there are some people who say, well, that's part of my heritage. Okay, so explain what your heritage is. And when you break it all the way down and you get down to phrases like our Southern way of life, well, okay, let's define that. Eventually, you dig hard enough and you find it's hidden under all of that. And that's what some people would argue about Welch, is that he hid those things very well because he was intelligent enough to do so. Somebody who's less sophisticated would just come out and, you know, talk about the Jewish cabal, you know, and that would be it. Or they would use a word like cabal and say it's got nothing to do with Jews, and so on and so forth. And I realize I'm using a lot of controversial language here, and thank God I'm actually suspended from YouTube at the moment, because this would get me suspended. right? You know, but I'm honestly discussing something that is a matter of history, Mike. I mean, you understand this. I'm not supporting or lashing out at anybody here.
Well, one of the things you talked about, you know, we were born in the 1970s.
Yeah.
Is the Birch Society, and I'll talk about the Schwartz guy in a second, but the Birch Society had a peak. Mm-hmm. In the 60s, like 66, 65, when Goldwater lost, their influence, you know, they exploded from the 50s on to the Goldwater campaign, then they peaked out when he lost.
Right.
And then in the 70s, they had a huge resurgence.
Right.
And actually got bigger and more influential than they were in the 1960s. But one thing that Welch did is by the early 1970s, he shifted his rhetoric a lot from talking about communism per se to a bigger conspiracy. Like up until then, he would always say that, you know, that the conspiracy was located in Moscow, run by the Soviet Union, international communist conspiracy. And really, the story, the Fred Schwartz story, him doing this mm-hmm. first conference in 1961, you know, at that moment, you know, to get 16,000 people, be on television, all these figures there, anti-communism was mainstream, you know, in the 50s and early 1960s. And it, as a movement, you know, or as I thought of being mainstream, it just faded and faded. Mm-hmm. As the years went on. But what Welch did in the early 70s, he shifted the center of the conspiracy from being simply communism mm-hmm. To the Illuminati, and made communism and every, you know, all these different things, you know, as simple appendages of this Illuminati conspiracy. So international banking is part of it. Communism's a part of it.
Right.
The Eastern establishment's part of it. You know, every social movement he doesn't like is basically controlled by the Illuminati.
Right. And then you get into the Fabian socialist movements and all this kind of stuff. And I get it. And that's exactly the furnace in which, the Alex Jones sandwich is getting its bread baked, whether people realize it or not, because listen to early Alex Jones. This is exactly what he was talking about. Initially it's about the New World Order. It now replaces Illuminati. Because, the Illuminati is this organization. We study it. We find out it's an organization that existed for a short period of time. This and that. Oh, no, that still continues to exist. And also, it's about a new world order. And they talked about the one world currency. And this also allowed them to evoke religiosity in there. Because just like we hear about still and constantly and always, the doomsday thing. You know, where it's like, look, this is about the mark of the beast. You're not going to be able to trade. You're going to have to necessarily accept the mark. This is why all things will be unified. One world government, one world religion, all of that. And it all comes together. It all slowly got baked into one pie, you know. And nowadays it's impossible to separate this stuff anymore because but it did begin in different places, you know. Which I think is the most fascinating part of it, still having its influence. Like, this is why, by the way, I always attack that whole, Federal Reserve thing with the Kennedy assassination. Because that originated with John Birch Society stuff. They were one of the first people to come out and do that and say, oh, it's because he was making these silver certificates, don't you know, the U.S. notes. And which, meanwhile, total misunderstanding of what happened there. But it was a plausible argument. And, oh, by the way, Lincoln and the Greenback, before you even get to really ask a good question, they'll tell you it's about that. Meanwhile, Lincoln's Greenback was meant to facilitate a completely different thing. And the monetary mechanism, which was not eliminated when Kennedy was killed anyway, stood for a whole other purpose. It actually had to do with the amount of silver which was still on deposit in Federal Reserve banks. But pay no attention to the facts because we have a story to tell you and it makes a lot of sense, right? And it's so weird that this stuff starts out in these political movements that are on the fringe and then get introduced into other places. And eventually, what do? They make their way into a more mainstream kind of presentation. And Alex Jones, a lot more mainstream than anybody wants to give him credit for. That's for sure. I mean, look, CNN wasn't going to run the documentary. Now they did. They're his best promotional tool. Okay. And, we now know that, look, he definitely is bedfellows with the establishment because, look, he had a president who was his buddy, right? I mean, directly, what do we need to talk about here? Okay. And a lot of the vagaries that are now presented are meant to be signals to people that have on some level accepted this, all right, have on some level accepted it because, as per usual, if something is repeated enough times, it becomes a lot more factual, a lot more accessible to a lot of people who want to believe something like this in the first place. But meanwhile, I want you to get back to this guy Schwartz because I don't know so much about him, honestly. I know about what happened in L.A., and this, because the whole anti, with Kennedy and the anti, I mean, I'm not trying to hover on Kennedy here, but the whole, like, he's a communist and he's, soft on communism and he's looking for detente as opposed to, opposing them directly. This was something that was being baked in a lot of furnaces at that time. There were military people, as you well know, some of their sentimentality went this way. Your Curtis LeMays of the world and stuff, they definitely thought this way, right? That he was sort of weak on things. He wasn't handling things strong in a military fashion. And at the time in 1961 that you're talking about, what's so funny? How long was he actually in office at that point? 3 months?
Just a couple months.
3 months. Okay, logically, can you grab hold of a military and change the direction of it in 90 days? No, you can't, in case anybody's wondering. I'm sorry, Mike. Please continue, though, and tell us about this other guy. But I'm just saying, isn't it remarkable that they were already slapping him with the communist brush, you know, 3 months after he gets in office? Because, you know, in 1961, I mean, things must have moved faster than they do today, Mike, right?
Oh, well, I mean, it is something else. But one point I want to make about Welch, and then I'll get to the French word spell.
Sure.
Before he founded the John Birch Society, he was working for the National Manufacturer Association. Mm-hmm. National Association of Manufacturers. He had a candy business making candies, mm-hmm. With his brother, and he got rich doing that. And once he turned about 50, he wanted to get involved in politics, and he became a writer for the National Association of Manufacturers. That's the most powerful business organization in the United States. And, you know, it's a conservative outfit.
Yeah.
But when he founded the John Birch Society, several high-level members of the National Association of Manufacturers became top executives or board members, I should say, of the Birch Society and helped fund it. So in a way, that's where it really came out of. And it's not a, you know, it's not a Klan outfit or I'm trying to argue that the Birch Society came out of somewhat mainstream conservatism at the time.
Well, right, because again, it is another movement that says we are the real conservatives, right? The establishment conservatives, but this is where it came from. The establishment conservatives are not conservative enough. So here is the push. How often has that happened, you know, I don't know, half of the 20th century going into now almost a quarter of the 21st century? How many times have we seen this already? Where the new conservative faction comes around and says the conservatives are not conservative enough. This is the cycle, is it not, Michael?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay.
As far as the Schwartz character, now, what his business model was after he did this first L.A. event, he did this for a couple years all across the country, holding these 5 to 7 day seminars with various speakers. And what he would do is he had a staff of people, and they would go into community and contact conservative activists, the Chamber of Commerce, local politicians, teachers, churches, and they would create this organization or, you know, informally of supporters who would pave the way for the conference coming. They would promote the conference. So they had this real coordinated grassroots effort everywhere they went that ensured a huge turnout. But what happened was after a year and a half, all this, the people in all these communities across the country, they became less interested in anti-communism conferences.
Right.
You know, particularly like after the Cuban Missile Crisis, and he wasn't just doing this stuff in the South; he was doing it all over the country, the Midwest too.
Clearly, L.A. is not part of the South, so
yeah. So his model just stopped working.
Right.
People just, you know, in leaders of different communities across the country lost interest. I think the issue of communism just kind of peaked out and left the mainstream.
You know, you cry wolf enough times, and that's the truth. You cry wolf enough times, and people get bored. I mean, after a while, they're going to realize there's no wolf. And the communist boogeyman only lasts just so long as you can instill fear. I mean, you and I also lived through a time period when there was a peak of communist fear or communist paranoia. Because the Soviets were going to do what? They were going to wipe us off the planet with the nuclear weapons, weren't they? We had to be worried about that. And after a certain number of years, what happened? Our whole generation just kind of shrugged our shoulders and went, eh. You know, it hasn't happened yet. When is it coming? You know, if you keep saying the sky is falling and nobody gets hit in the head, what do you expect? So, yeah, after a while, people are going to get bored. They're going to get burnt out on it. I mean, look at the war on terror in recent years, right? Anybody even talking about that anymore? No, not really. I mean, yeah, I know we supposedly killed an Al-Qaeda leader recently, right? What is he, dead the
fourth? But no one cares.
Fourth time now that guy's been dead now? Al-Zawahiri, is it? Is that the guy's name? I don't know. I forget. It's all a weird thing. I mean, Al-Baghdadi was killed at least three times, right? I mean, come on. Where are we going with this? What I'm saying, I'm not picking on you, Mike. What I'm saying is that I just point out the weird cycles that we go through. And one of the things is that, you know, fear only lasts so long if you don't deliver some bang for the buck. It's just that simple. But look, I'm going to take a break here, and I'm going to come back and continue this discussion with Mike Swanson. You know, this is an interesting area and does talk about the political science of the cycles that I'm telling you can watch unfold right now. The author of Why the Vietnam War, The War State, and also the guy behind WallStreetWindow.com will be back with me at the other side of this break. Stick around.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold. Silver. The stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
Do you like history, real history, that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, Nuclear Bombs and Nation Building in Southeast Asia,
by author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, Nuclear Bombs and Nation Building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War,
by author Mike Swanson.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
Ocelli.com.
The second segment of the Ocelli Effect is live here on a Thursday, and it is just after, what, 8:30 p.m. on the 18th day of August, 2022. Anyhow, in the next hour, I'll take your calls, but in this hour, I'm only taking one, and that's from Mike Swanson, the guy behind WallStreetWindow.com, the author of The War State and Why the Vietnam War. Of course, the links will be with the show notes if you want to pursue that and get the books. I recommend them both. And Mike's written a bunch of books. I recommend three of them highly because I don't understand finance, and Mike has books out about finance too and stuff. But anyway, sorry, Mike, I don't recommend your financial books, and you know why? Because I don't know anything about it. I probably would, because you probably did it well, but I'm just being honest with the listener. But The War State, I've been recommending that book for years, even before I started talking to you. So anyways, back to this. It is a fascinating sort of evolution when you see how these cycles have gone through. But you're telling me about this Schwartz guy again, the doctor from Australia. I find him to be an interesting figure. I don't know much about him at all. But that's kind of where we led off when we took the break. So I turn it back to you, sir.
Well, like I was saying, he got big early in the 1960s organizing these 5 to 7 day anti-communism rallies, basically, with multiple speakers. He'd get right. communities to support it, and you know, actually, you know, they put up the donations and the money, and then it peaked out. Interest peaked out. Communism as an issue just kind of died away from the mainstream, but he adjusted too to keep going, keep his organization going. Now he was a writer, and his stance, he wasn't like McCarthy, you know, making charges that there are communists in the government. Instead, he tackled it as an ideology and wrote a book called You Can Trust the Communists to Be Communists, which was one of the biggest sellers, you know, on the right wing in the 1960s when it came out. Mm. And it was kind of written for, and he wrote a comic version for children too, actually. But he, you know, the similarity with him and the Birchers and people of that ilk was he did posit that it was a conspiracy, and that they were looking to undermine society and institutions, and that would be how they would take over. But now what as a speaker, the difference between him and Welch wasn't a good speaker at all. People can look up Robert Welch, JBS on YouTube, and he just wasn't a great speaker. This guy, I haven't been able to find but one or two clips on YouTube, but by the accounts, he was a really good speaker. Now, what he did after his rallies, kind of stopped working, he went on a speaking tour for about a decade, with, two other people. One was Herbert Philbrick, who there was a TV show in the 1950s called I Led Three Lives.
Right.
And that series was inspired by a book called I Was a Communist for the FBI, which is the story of Herbert Philbrick. He claimed he infiltrated the U.S. Communist Party in the 1940s, and he read this book that became a giant seller. The TV show lasted 117 episodes. I've never seen an episode myself, but supposedly it was Lee Harvey Oswald's favorite show when he was growing up as a teenager. Now,
well, I just want to tell you that I'm going to go check now, but I'm pretty sure, because I brought this up on a show about Oswald, there's a couple episodes up on YouTube if you want to see them. Just so you know, I Led Three Lives. Yeah, I'm going to get that reference. Go ahead. Sorry.
So, yeah, Schwartz went on a speaking tour for years with this Herbert Philbrick character, who he would... And then a singer, this woman that was a singer, and she wrote songs against communism. But the way they would run their thing is Philbrick would kind of tell his story about infiltrating the communists, how bad the communists are. You know, so it's a narrative story, gets people's attention. Then Schwartz would kind of give arguments against the communist ideology, and then the lady would kind of entertain people with her songs. Now, in no way, you know, was he as big nationally as he was in 1961 and 62 with his mass conferences. So he made another shift in the final chapter of his career, and he started to hold small college-type seminars, is what he kind of marketed them as. near university campuses, and he would have what he called a faculty that would teach, and he would get people to donate, and they would use that money to pay the so-called stipends of young people to come and attend these events. You know, basically study sessions for, this is, it's kind of like a small version of his mass rally, but now, you know, it's for 50 or 100 younger people, in a pseudo academic setting. Now, when I read this, I thought this is kind of funny because right now there's this, you know, woman on the right, Barry Weiss, who's setting up something just like this. It's called the University of Texas at Austin. I don't think it's started yet, but it's not a real university. It's not accredited. You don't get a degree, but you attend for free. But it's pay. You get scholarships. You just got to apply for them, but the scholarships are paid by the donors to this, you know, nonprofit organization. I read this. It's like, this is the exact same model, a business model that Fred Schwartz had. So it's kind of funny, as you're saying, these things come and go, you know.
Well, it's an indirect thing that they do where they provide what they call a scholarship or a stipend or a grant, right? It's a grant from whatever the organization calls itself. And at the end of the day, it's the same organization that's running the event, right? It'll turn around, well, we'll give you a grant to go to this school. And like you said, it's not necessarily any sort of accredited school. You're not going to get college credit for it or anything, but maybe they'll give you a nice certificate when you leave that says you attended, this educational seminar. And meanwhile, it's all just this, spreading the word, so to speak, you know, looking for friendly people who are willing to go through the process to sign up and get funded. Now, I've heard of people that actually make a living kind of doing this stuff where they go from place to place and, you know, they give you like a little allowance for this and that and the third thing. And if you're careful with your money, I'm told, and you make a couple of different choices about this or that, they even let you keep some of the grant or stipend or whatever it is they're giving you to fund this stuff. Do you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you can kind of go ahead and become like a professional sort of conference attendee. I don't know what happened post-COVID, but a couple of years ago, this was true. Barry Weiss is a weird figure, by the way. You ever seen her speak and stuff? Like, they were bringing her out as a talking head a couple of years ago a lot. But I don't know. I haven't seen her as much lately. Have you noticed that her media presence is a little lower now?
Well, I've only seen her. I don't really watch the television that much, so I'm not. You know, the TV news. I watch baseball games, so I don't really.
Well, you know me. I'm always trying to compile.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I've kind of. I mean, I was watching more, and then I kind of stopped after.
Well,
a year or two ago.
Yeah, no, I got you. I'm not sitting and watching TV that much either. What I'm saying is that I happen to sample a lot of this stuff. Like, like some of the, you know, the political talk shows and, the different, you know, what is this new author saying about this or that or the third thing? Like, I found it really weird. What was it? Not this past week, but the week before, I think, Chris Cuomo was on, Bill Maher's show. You know, like, I've always got to catch stuff like that because it's like, oh, what's that guy saying about after getting fired from CNN, right, because of his conflict of interest? And then he comes out, he's got a political podcast that automatically is like the number two political podcast in all of podcasting now, right? Like, instantaneously, he's got a successful podcast that somebody put money behind. Chris Cuomo.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Remember him? The guy who was a CNN anchor, the brother of Andrew Cuomo, the now disgraced former governor of New York.
Well,
yeah.
With the Weiss woman, I mean, my understanding, I mean, I'm not that knowledgeable of her. I mean, my impression is she's a real neoconservative.
Yes.
That came out, you know, with the war on terror and being real hawkish and excited about fighting those wars.
Right, and she had...
That's my memory of
it. Well, and she had another high level of popularity during the Trump administration, kind of coming out and talking about, you know, is this really conservatism? You know, let's talk to Barry Weiss. So they brought her out on all these political shows, whether it was, you know, the comedic ones or the, you know, just as a talking head, right? You know, that when they couldn't get Scott Jennings to show up at CNN or whatever, maybe they'd grab Barry Weiss. They would get, you know, she was a conservative commentator as well. Like S.C. Cup was before becoming an anchor, right?
Okay.
You know, like, I wouldn't be surprised if she had an anchor job somewhere. I don't pay that much attention to what these people's jobs are. But I do pay attention to the fact that they drag them out and they become popular commentators for a little while. You know, like right now we're looking at John Dean a lot more, right? Because of all the political scandal and because of Watergate and Roger Stone. And so you see all of a sudden John Dean reemerged. Who even knew he was alive up until a couple of years ago? John Dean.
I saw his name in a headline the other day saying Trump is going to really get it this time, basically.
Well, see, but that's the thing is he's been making headlines ever since somebody said we're going to impeach Trump. John Dean got pulled out of mothballs. He was back.
Yeah.
You know, okay. I mean, look, what do you call it? Woodward and Bernstein have been writing books all this time. John Dean disappeared.
Well, that's one irony, you know, about all this.
Sorry.
The far right. You know, you think about Joseph McCarthy and Roy Cohn, right?
Yeah.
Roy Cohn was McCarthy's lawyer.
Yep.
Researcher, whatever. And he was homosexual, and that's what got, you know, he wanted to get some boyfriend or something not to go and get drafted into the service or sent overseas, wanted to keep him as a person on their committee, and that's what how that whole thing blew up. But then as Cohn got older, mm-hmm. he became personal friends with Donald Trump, and
right.
I think one probably could trace him as a mentor to Trump.
Yes.
As far as getting involved in politics or the media and all this kind of stuff. But the irony in that is, look, in the 1950s, you know, they executed the Rosenbergs for having nuclear secrets, supposedly.
Right. Supposedly.
And now Trump's, you know, caught up in this thing about documents, you know, these classified documents he didn't want to part with.
Well,
these
right.
It's crazy.
No, but that's the thing is if you take
ironic,
a look.
Crazy. You
yeah,
know.
You take a look at the ebb and flow of what was, right? What have they been telling us for the past, 7 years? Hey, you know, Nixon, I don't know, does this rise to the level of Nixon? Right? And they've rehabilitated Nixon. They've rehabilitated a lot of these figures of the past who were demons one way or another. Now it's like, no, actually they weren't
George
so bad.
Bush?
George Bush. I mean, W.A., you know what? He wasn't such a bad guy. I mean, remember that? I mean, he was kind of sane, you know? Sane. Okay. I mean, the whole weird thing with, you know, Liz Cheney. I mean, come on. You know? I think, anyway... I'm sorry. I'm totally going into too many different directions here, but back to this. What I'm saying, the ebb and flow of this is so weird, and then you try and connect these things back, and you say to somebody, listen, do you want to be associated with this entire murderer's row of people that were connected together? And most people in logical times would say no at a certain point. You know, they have a point at which they go, nah, that's too far. But anymore, it's just, it makes no sense, you know? It just makes no sense at this point. So, but these things that are ideologies, these things that are, partial fragments of an ideology, that are part of the alternate history, that are part of the alternate, psychological makeup of these movements are so weird because you take a look at where they originated, how they actually came to be, what the philosophical basis is for it, what the, you know, and it's just, it's very confusing to me at this point. It just seems like everything is really warped in a strange way. You know, how do you connect, like you said, Roy Cohn is an interesting one. I mean, how do you put Roger Stone, two presidents, Nixon and Trump together, okay, and also tie them straight through New York City, and Joseph McCarthy. Well, Roy Cohn works just fine. the guy who, you know, later on died of AIDS. And he denied his sexuality and all that kind of stuff, but we now know what's what. One of the most virulent and hard-working anti-communist guys that was ever part of the committees and the legal groups and all that, that did all that work, right? Anyway, it's just fascinating to me. And now, like I said, the weird alternate history people that are coming out going, nah, McCarthy was actually right. He actually knew. These were communists, communism. And now they have a whole new definition for communism, which is funny because you were talking about Welch and you were talking about this other guy, the doctor from Australia, and how it is there was a difference between attacking an ideology and then attacking a multi-layered mythos or a multi-layered system or pantheon of all of these connected organizations that become part of the overall New World Order or Illuminati or whatever else. It makes perfect sense.
I went to a Birch meeting, what year was that? 96, 97, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in college and I was going to the grocery store and they had put a flyer up saying there's a John Birch Society meeting. It wasn't on the college campus. It was held at the, like an auditorium that the city government had.
Right.
And anyway, I went to it and, when I got to the place, I got out of my car and there was a guy getting out of a pickup truck and I thought, well, I don't want to go in here by myself or they'll think I'm a spy or something. So I walked up to the guy and talked to him and then I walked in with him and sat down with him and he wasn't with the people either.
Uh-huh.
He was older than me, sort of like a redneck looking guy, but the people that when we got in there, the people were older than him. You know, they're all elderly.
Okay.
70s or older, is that, it looked like. And they were like lawyers and doctors and stuff, like, you know, real professional high class people or whatever you want to call it, upper class. But anyway, then the speaker came and I think at the time this guy was head of the Birch Society or one of the top three or something. And his speech was about the New World Order, and I didn't really, it was very convoluted. The only thing I remember is there was some sort of American flag behind him on the, you know, on the stage that was already there. It wasn't something he brought. And he claimed that the flag had some maritime symbols on it, or the pole did.
Well, there's symbology to that.
He was claiming that was part of the plot.
Yeah, he was talking about the gold trim around the flag, probably.
That's what it was, yeah.
Yeah. No, listen, and there is something to that. Okay, these things are not there by mistake, Mike. You understand? The idea, you ever see that there's an eagle at the top of the pole and all that? That's a very, you know, those things are not there just because they look neat. You know, they are there for a reason. So I got to tell you, that does sound, and you see this? I'm agreeing with the Birch guy, right? All right. Now, am I one of these right wingers? Not at all. But some of the stuff that they talk about is very real, very, very interesting and not always discussed, directly. You know, that flag with that gold around it is not even technically the flag of the country with that gold, trim on it, right? This is probably exactly what he was saying to you, wasn't it?
Something like that. I mean, it's a long time ago.
Yeah. No, I get it. I'm just saying, I know this whole thing. I've heard this many times, gone through it. I mean, did they do any of the, like, sovereign citizen stuff during that, too, as well? Like,
no, I don't remember that.
Okay, no, I'm just checking.
Happened was the guy that I walked in there with, when the Birch fellow was speaking, this was a high-level Birch person. He'd written books, you know, about the United Nations and stuff. But I was sitting next to the guy I walked in there with, and he got out a piece of paper and he wrote something like, he's not talking about the Jews, and handed that to me.
Oh, well, that guy was probably mad, like, hey, he's not mentioning the Jews.
Well, that's what happened. Yeah. Then when the thing was over with and we're leaving, you know, he was kind of trying to recruit me or something. Mm. He just went in this litany about, I mean, it's probably the first time I ever even heard anything like this in person, but he was basically speaking Christian identity stuff, you know, telling me that,
yeah,
the Jews are not really the Jews, you know, it's all this, you know, it's just this kind of business. But at the time, I mean, this was in the 90s when that militia movement stuff was big in the United States for a couple of years.
Right.
And I assume he was probably part of that, or because there were some groups like that in Virginia, in the mountains and stuff.
Yeah, but see, I heard this same stuff in New Jersey. Okay. See,
yeah.
That's the thing. It's not just in the South.
Right, sure.
I heard exactly the same stuff. And by the way, the same kind of rhetoric was also, as I disclosed on this show, I had somebody take me to one of these white Aryan resistance meetings. And guess what? They talked about the same stuff. You know, and then somebody found out that, I might, not be entirely white. So I was all of a sudden not as welcome. But, that's what happened.
Well, at the time, you know, I knew what the guy was talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, I never talked to anyone like that in person.
Right, right.
But I had been a listener of shortwave radio, and it was dominated by, you know, these type of programs.
Right, and then they would come out with the biblical verses and tell you about, well, look, you see where it says in here about the synagogue of Satan and all of that kind of stuff. These are the false Jews that come around the end times, right?
Yeah, there was a book Clinton was president, and some guy, Tex Mars,
mm-hmm.
had a book about the Clintons, and it was about Hillary Clinton being satanic or something of that effect.
Yeah, well, here you go. And again, that stuff survives still.
Yeah, to this day. Yeah. So it's all ripped off over and over again. But that's the first, that's probably the first time, first person I ever heard talk about the Clintons that way, you know. Rush Limbaugh, I don't think he called them satanic.
Well, no, that's the thing, that somebody's joking in the chat room. Chuck's been exposed as a John Bircher. I'm not a John Bircher. It's just that some of the stuff that they had to say is exactly the same stuff that you wind up confronting in conspiracy culture now. Even when it's not supposed to be attached to a political ideology, it's across the board everywhere. That's the thing I'm trying to point out here. And indeed, it survived and incubated quite a bit in the fringes. I find it funny that you said the militia movement was big in the 90s, because it wasn't that big in the 90s. I mean, in a way it was.
Well,
and in a way,
it just got more media attention.
Yeah, it got a lot more media attention. And why did that happen? Timothy McVeigh, right? So, you know.
Well, I like to know what's going on now, because,
yeah, well,
in 2020, I mean, I know I was telling you on the show, there's a militia in the county neighboring me,
right,
supposedly, and a militia two counties up, you know, but it's a ticket. I mean, they had it in the newspaper. It looked like 100 people were there, but I don't think it amounted. I don't think it's lasting long.
Yeah, well, see, but that's the thing, is there are militias all over the country, and quite frankly, they've been stewing now for quite a while. Look, let's not get confused and start calling the Oath Keepers a militia, because they're not. It's different. But there are all these sorts of organizations. And look, I'm sitting in the home state of one of the biggest ones in the country. Chris Hill has been on this show. He's now the leader of the largest militia in Georgia. You know, and I talked to him back when we were discussing the whole thing that happened at the Bundy Ranch and all that. I don't know if you recall those days on this show, but, you know, I covered that live, with Vince Easley, who was on the show, my on the ground correspondent. Anyway, what I'm saying is that these things have continued, regardless of how much media attention they've gotten. And if you don't believe me, just, you know, go back over the Kyle Rittenhouse thing, because, you know, everybody from Vox to Vice and all these different news organizations, they seem to know where to find every single militia across the country, because they found these guys to get comments, you know, as Second Amendment supporters, they go to the militias instead of, you know, they go to the NRA, they go to the militias. They don't go to the common people who actually support it. They go to them because they're going to get the most extreme viewpoint. And that's part of the game here, too. But the thing is that these organizations are often steeped in exactly the same stuff. And it's just, it hasn't changed. They have not changed the water in a long time because people are still drinking it. It's just that simple. So, I mean, I'm just pointing out that there's a history to this, that it didn't just arrive recently or in the 90s. It's just that this is a constant ebb and flow of these ideas. And some of them are legitimate. Some of them are false. Some of them are coded racist. Some of them are about, really, truthfully, as stupid as it sounds, and as much as I don't want to sound like a liberal here, because, you know, what they call a liberal today, I don't want to be identified with, but the fact is that, you know, that when they say a lot of these people are parts of hate groups, they're not parts of hate groups that they know of, but they're steeped in exactly the same stuff, and instead of using the language of, you know, well, just, you know, being blunt and blatant like a Klansman, they've got a whole set of linguistics designed to make it sound like something else. And they didn't invent it. They were just handed it. They inherited this. And it's really weird to watch this rhetoric happen and people to pick it up and to run with it and to take it into the mainstream. And just as foolish as on the other side, the fact that everything is an act of violence when it's not, and everything is, you know, some slight because you didn't include every single possible permutation of a individual that could be included, and all this other stuff. It's a very weird political and social landscape we find ourselves in, Mike. And yeah, go ahead.
To say the least.
To say the least. So I give you a couple of minutes here if you want. I mean, we ran a little bit over time, but who cares? Because it's always good to talk to you, Mike. I mean, well, I don't care, but I'm taking up your time. So, but anything that you want to add on here or finish out with, go right ahead. I'll shut up. But, Mike Swanson's been with me for just a touch over an hour here on the show. And, I'll go to a break and go to your phone calls in the next segment. But, yeah, Mike, go ahead. Anything that you want to throw in here or finish up with?
Well, I think you put a good bow on everything, so I don't really have anything else to add. I'm kind of curious to see what the callers have to say after the break.
You know what? So am I. You don't want to hang around, though. You probably got something to do.
I got to take off, but I'll listen to the recording of the show later.
Of course you do. And that's the thing. I love Mike. He's actually a listener. So somehow he's been putting up with me for a few years. But I urge you to put up with him. Go over to WallStreetWindow.com. Be in the know. It's not just about Wall Street. And, of course, pick up his books if you haven't already. And if you have, hey, look, Christmas is coming. You can always give one of them as a gift. And I highly recommend The War State as a gift for somebody who's interested in history, especially 20th century history. The War State, it's that red book that you see there on the sidebar on Uccelli.com and also on WallStreetWindow.com. But anyways, that book, as well as Why the Vietnam War, which is the first in a series of three about that particular conflict, and contains information and ideas even that are available nowhere else. Mike Swanson, thanks so much for doing this with me.
Thank you. Good. Talk with you next week.
Absolutely. I am talking to you next week, right?
Yeah, I'll be here.
Excellent. I look forward to it. Stick around, guys. The Uccelli Effect will return after this.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Uncle, I'll bet you remember the time when Benjamin Fulford said that the Asian Secret Society was going to dispatch ninjas to take out the Illuminati to change the entire world for the better.
That ain't never gonna happen. That never did.
It never did it?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, because there's a lot of false promises.
Fools? I can't say well.
We better not say and be polite, but there are no false promises at the Ocelli.com radio network.
That's exactly it. Not. It's truth, the point, right to the point. And this is what I like. Straight to the point.
Ocelli.
Ocelli.com.
Listen now.
Listen now.
Do you like history, real history, that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before, that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War.
By author Mike Swanson.
What would I do? Revelation through conversation. In a radio show / podcast. You want the good news? Listen to the Ocelli Effect. Chuck Ocelli is the most underrated voice in all media. News, education, and entertainment. The Daily Bread from Ocelli.com. Go there. Save yourself from ignorance. Ocelli.com. But we all agreed to put Ocelli.com on and listen to the Ocelli Effect. Revelation through conversation. Ocelli.com.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
Ocelli.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
Uncle, do you remember that time when the year 2012 was going to create the apocalypse, end of the world?
Right. And it thought it would come to the end.
Did it ever end up that way?
No.
Yeah.
Like we say, the only way it would end is when he is ready for
That's
it
right.
to end. That's how it is.
So if you want the real truth about 2012, you better listen to the Ocelli.com radio network.
Radio podcast.com.
Yeah, forget it's John Cusack.
John Cusack
doesn't know what he's talking about.
Know what he's talking actually about. Correct.
But we here at the Ocelli Radio Network sure do.
Do you sure understand and understand where it's actually coming from?
Ocelli.com.
Ocelli.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Get ready for the Ocelli Effect.
319-527-5016. 319-527-5016. That's the number to call if you want to get in on the show tonight. And tonight being Thursday, okay, Thursday, it is the, 18th? Yes, the 18th day of August, 2022. So if you're hearing me live, you can call in. Otherwise, without a time machine, you're not going to reach me at the moment. But if you want to call in and be part of the show, comment, discuss, throw a new topic on the table, that's fine too, because I don't know really what I got to say here. This is totally unplanned, unscripted, and hell, I don't even think I have any notes for the next hour. So 319-527-5016. That is the number to call. Yesterday's show is ready to be posted, but I could not get it posted. I had little work to do on the website earlier, so I had to do that first to make sure that you guys could actually see it. And I probably should have just ran it through the separate distribution. Yesterday's show was kind of weird. And, yeah, Charlie Robinson was on, as well as Miriam Hanin and her whole thing about the George Floyd event and what came of it being a total psyop. Well, I don't know. A psyop in that there it was manipulated and all. Yeah, sure. A psyop in that it wasn't real, I got a problem. But, again, Miriam is doing work and getting herself banned and busted in different places online, and I'm not sure what that means. Because sometimes people get themselves in trouble, and it's perfectly reasonable as to why it is somebody wants to kick them off the platform. Okay? You know, you actually threaten violence. That's, yeah, not really permissible according to, most, you know, terms of use. I don't know, threatening violence, a criminal act like that, you're not supposed to be able to commit criminal acts directly online, right? Or are you? Well, maybe you are. Or maybe some people are. You know, it does seem like selective enforcement is, fully in effect at all times, isn't it? Anyway, let's go through a couple of thoughts I might have on a couple of things. Ho-hum about Liz Cheney really losing her, what was it? She got primaried, right? So her primary loss, the fact that she only got, what, a quarter of the vote there in Wyoming? Shocker, right? Not really. why is anybody surprised? Everybody predicted that. It's not a big deal. Does it have anything to do with, oh, her integrity and all that? No, it's really weird to watch the support of people shift. Now, I know that that Jack and some others already are pointing out how interesting it is that the alleged liberal media is backing somebody like Liz Cheney as being a holy great person and everything. I got to tell you, I don't think she's a great person. I don't think she's an evil person. I don't care. She's despicable just like most politicians. I mean, and look, and she's got the lineage to back it up. She's especially despicable. If you are, you know, God, I mean, Jack called him Darth Cheney, so I don't want to do that. But, you know, you're the daughter of Cheney? What are you supposed to be? Girl Scout? No. Anyway. A lot of despicable things that she's done that have nothing to do with representing the people and all that kind of good stuff, but they didn't want to kick her out until it was time to give her the litmus test for the GOP, which lately is, do you support Trump or not? What are you going to do? You know, I don't like going to parties that I'm not really truly invited to, and when I'm not wanted at a party, I leave. Gotta tell you. But Liz still went through the worst, you know, political defeat in I don't know how many years by an American politician. I mean, dead people usually poll better than this. What'd she get, 29%? Something like that? Okay, that tells you where it's at in Wyoming. What are you going to do? Does this mean anything? And the silliness about her possibility, like being a spoiler candidate, like she's going to go and siphon off votes from Trump. No, she's not. It is so weird to watch them try and game these things out and act like any of the old rules apply in the first place. And even if they did, the game is rigged. And I don't mean by voting machines. The voting machine thing is too funny. I mean, you don't need to rig the voting machines. First of all, the people that vote don't know what they're voting on, and anyway, it's so irrelevant. It's like the whole, well, stop the steal. How are they going to steal something from you don't actually have possession of? You don't have a voice, a vow to give to somebody. I mean, you can make vows to them all you want, but they don't have to return the favor. It's like a one-way marriage, right? A vote is a vow. Anyway, like as if any of that ever counted in the first place. Oh, no, in 2020 it went wrong. In 2000 it went wrong. How about it hasn't gone right? It never has. I mean, it's just, as time has gone on with force multipliers of all sorts and technological advances, things do get easier and you can manage larger numbers. I mean, that's just, the way good sourcing of your, farm animals works, right? I mean, this is why we have, giant, ag and giant, what do they call that? The giant slaughter machines that handle the animal flesh. I don't even know. Point is, you know, you can tune into the shows with Christy and get the information on that on Tuesdays. Although we have kind of gone into the esoteric realm lately, got a feeling we're going to wind up having to talk about dandelions again and other stuff. But that was an interesting show, and I know I got that one out a day late as well. Look, everybody's got to be a little patient with me. I'm having some troubles, and I was one-handed for a couple of days, took a little hand injury. And I don't type one-handed, despite the rumors. So kind of only had one hand to type with for a couple of days. And I repaired that, I think, for the most part. So I should be back up to full speed by the end of the week. We'll see. But still pumping out the podcasts and making sure everybody's podcast I produce gets out there. So anyway, sometime tomorrow you'll see Jax in this one and the one from Wednesday. I'll try and get out Wednesdays tonight. I should have already gotten it out, but I wanted to make sure I had all of the reference links correct, which is, you know, something I would like to hear from you guys on. If you want to write to me and tell me whether, you know, you even care that I put all those reference links in, because I won't spend those several hours a week assembling all that stuff to make sure you have references and videos to watch and, you know, educational documents and PDFs and... Why do I bother to put all that together if you guys don't want it? So, you know, tell me, listen, Chuck, I don't care about your show notes. I listen to the show. I don't give a crap. That'll be fine. I won't be insulted. That reminds me. I got to remind Jack that I want one of those T-shirts, too. All right. I'm totally just all over the place here. 319-527-5016. You can call in and settle me down if you like. Let's see, what else has gone on besides Ms. Janie's loss? Well, you know, I didn't even really comment on this this nonsense about this Trump, you know, raid. Should I bother to discuss that? Why not? You know what? It's much, again, ado about a whole lot of nothing and a lot of political theater for nothing, for naught, once more. So, because here's the thing. Let's just say, theoretically, Trump did a lot of stuff wrong. Let's just say he violated all sorts of things that he shouldn't have and broke the law and everything else. All things being as they truly are, do you think a guy like that ever pays for stuff like that? I mean, Weisselberg or whatever, his CFO or CEO or I'm not sure what, you know, he cooperated and he's going to pay a large fine and all that. And we saw that today. And we also saw that they're going to release, or they did release maybe, and I haven't gotten a chance to read it, the affidavit, which would have supported the warrant on the raid and this and that. But you know what? No matter how many details, documents, or anything else anybody ever releases, let me ask you a question. How many of the truly powerful are ever held accountable? Oh, wait a minute. You want to tell me Trump's not actually a powerful guy or not part of the establishment at all? So, you know, he's actually maybe in some trouble here. I don't think so. Because I assure you that no matter how much surveillance I had on my house, no matter how I might have had documents in my house or anything else, if somebody decided to come kicking in my door for whatever justification, first of all, the video would not be released unless they wanted it released. And it doesn't matter that it's my surveillance video, because they would have captured and restricted all of that. They would have grabbed everything and me and, you know, members of my family and all. And they would have made sure that, you know, I didn't make a peep, until I had an understanding that I was to keep my mouth shut and not interfere with their investigation that could affect others. Because that's the way the feds usually behave. Is this unusual? Is this political targeting? I don't know. Because honestly, is it or is it just ready? A good sucker punch for you. A nice fake out to tell you, look, pay attention to this nonsense because we want you to feel like this guy is actually under attack. I mean, Trump is raising a whole bunch of money off of this. I mean, that's real world results right away. Is anything ever going to come of this? Nobody knows. Is this just going to flip back around the other way? Okay, you know, you guys chase us for a little while. We'll chase you for a little while. We'll film it all. We'll edit it down, and we'll tell the people that we're actually battling with one another when in truth we're actually all colluding. I tend to be one of those kind of guys that thinks like that. That they're all actually in concert with one another, and for a little while you gotta play the bad guy side. Here, you do this and go against the American people's will for a little bit. We'll act like we're standing up for them, gather their support, their money, their energy, their time, and keep them thinking that they might get a chance at representation and that their votes count and all that good stuff. We're going to do that for a little while, and give us about 5 years of that, and then we'll trade places. And you know what? We can mix it up a little bit. We can tell people that somebody came from outside, somebody who wasn't supposed to win, because don't Americans love the underdog story? Everybody loves an underdog story. This guy wasn't supposed to win, but he did. These people weren't supposed to be in power, but they are. They're going to fight the tyranny, and the tyranny is whatever it is we told you it was. And meanwhile, you do have real grievances as individuals out there. Sure you do. And we're going to tell you, don't worry, we're going to address all of that. It's coming, don't worry. And what do you end up with? After a little while, the narrative shifts. You get a new boogeyman one way or another. And I love how I talked to Mike about this with the boogeyman of communists and the boogeyman of the war on terror and all that. Also love the fact that we recently, allegedly, killed another Al-Qaeda guy again. Does everybody remember Al-Qaeda? Do you? The base? You know about it? Okay. Anyway, doesn't matter. How many times is this guy going to die? Like I said, Al-Baghdadi must have died, I don't know, 6 times? I lost count. I mean, Bin Laden died a couple times, too. I mean, outside of the house he was supposedly chilling out in where he had conspiracy books on his shelf. Remember that? He's got... That was so funny, by the way. Like, literally, I had to ask the one guest, like, what did you think when they found one of your books on Bin Laden's shelf, you know? I forget what that guy's name was. I think I intentionally forgot what his name was. Because I'm pretty sure he ripped off Jordan Maxwell to write a book. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's all in the past, right? And can we make you afraid? Can we make you very, very afraid? Can we offer you the solution? Because we'll protect you. With this great military that we have to spend so much money on. And who is the military? It's all these honorable people. If you think honorable people are making decisions in the military really at the top, I have some string for you to play with. I really do. And I want you to learn how to tie your own shoes. Just because I hate to see the weak-minded injure themselves. But if you do actually understand that the people at the control switches really are not working in your best interest, and that does include the greater corporate empire, the greater American empire, the greater European empire, the greater empire of whatever is closest to you. If you think that they're acting in your best interest, well, then they're probably not in power, for starters. And after that, again, look, I might have some Jell-O in my fridge. I mean... I don't know if I should give you a spoon. It might be too sharp for you to handle. I don't like people to hurt themselves. And you might with a spoon. If you think for a moment these people are out to help you. Anyway, what about the left-right paradigm and the FBI? Are they the good guy? Are they the bad guy? Well, pick a day, pick a mood, and pick a political movement, and you'll get all different answers when I don't trust any of these bastards. Bottom line. And when it comes to law enforcement, sure, there are some Boy Scouts in there, but they're not running the show. So I don't know what to think. Every once in a while, though, you know, some mistake is made in the justice system and somebody who's actually wronged people is punished. But more often than not, it is only those who can't afford to buy their way through the justice system, who can't afford to purchase power, or who didn't inherit it through their own genetic stew or their own deeds, where, you know, they're simply owed one way or another. You know, if you don't get it that way, you're probably not getting a good result, unless, you know, you're just so unimportant that you're not even worthy of consideration. You're not worth the money they can draw out of you. You're not worthy of seizing your property. You're not worthy of, I mean, they've already got your body and your soul has already been signed for, so why ask Amazon to deliver anything else? Meanwhile, the author of The Satanic Verses got stabbed in the throat. I didn't get to comment on that either, and there are going to be some people that are going to say that's a false flag attack, or maybe Salman Rushdie has been dead for a long time and this is his doppelganger. Don't think so. But what was that all about? Do we have actual terrorism rising up once again? Is this the Iranians coming to get us? Is this the first volley in what will be the grand game of dodgeball that has nothing but, and appropriately, fake balls in it to keep you dancing so that you're dodging things that aren't actually coming at you? Oh, that's right. We call that the war on terror. Anyway, what do I know? I'm just a loudmouth blind idiot from Jersey, screaming at a microphone, barking at the moon on my own little network, my own little lily pad, and I appreciate you for tuning in. The Ocelli Effect will continue, and hopefully some of you guys will call in. 319-527-5016. 319-527-5016. I'll be back after this.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough.
Maybe you're thinking about getting started.
WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Go there now.
Go there now.
Revelation through conversation.
Support Chuck Ocelli at Chili.com.
There's no money in it, so
yeah, that is
that's the problem.
That's the biggest problem, I think. And you know, some people would say that, look, you're in an age when you can be independently supported, but quite frankly, I'm on that business model too. And look, I'm not going to complain, but I'm going to complain, okay? Because people want to support you, they love you to death, but honestly,
so if you're listening in, this is a very unsubtle request to support the damn show, and I want you to do this too, because you know, the Ocelli Report is one of the few places where Greg Palast can get his stuff out. I mean, you'll still see my bylines in some of these outlets, but nevertheless, you know, I used to be a regular on CNN and on MSDNC, but no more.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
Every time I put it on my face, I'm able to breathe just a little bit deeper.
What are people saying about MyTrueEssence.net?
I'm going to tell you something serious, man. I just want to tell you listeners, I bought some of that Modifilin from Christy, and she made me up some of this emu oil mixed with some other stuff. I don't know what's in it, but I like the way it smelled. And I started putting it on, rubbing it on my foot, rubbing it on my knee, and like the second day, I just noticed it. I'm walking around, I'm like, damn, my knee is loose.
I can tell you that oil you gave me helped me with my carpal and my shoulder problem. And if it wasn't, I wouldn't be working.
My ankles sort of really, really pesky and bother me. And I'm telling you, the pain just went away. Essential oils rule!
And when I put that on, it's like my skin
came alive.
MyTrueEssence.net.
With Chris Graves.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
I want them to appreciate the incredible job we're doing. We are doing a job the likes of which has never been done before. You're going to have mental depression for people. You're going to have large numbers of suicides. Take a look at what happened.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli. And we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before.
It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it.
Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
319-527-5016. If you're hearing me live on the 18th day of August, 2022, only at that time, let's see, about, 9:35 p.m. Eastern. If you're hearing me at that time, you can call in 319-527-5016. Any other time, you'll need a time machine because, you're going to have to reach back into the past. And, maybe we'll talk about that on next Tuesday's show. How one can reach into the past and change one's own history. How about that? Okay, so with that in mind, yeah, I guess I do have a caller, and I'm going to go to him in just a second, but one more time, 319-527-5016. And I'm not sure where this will go, but I do recognize the number. So this might be the host of another show on Ocelli.com, actually. Calling in, maybe he can promote his show on Sunday coming up. Chris, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, this is not going to go anywhere, so don't worry about it.
Well, I love it when you set the bar nice and high for yourself. I appreciate that. That's great. Anyway, how you doing, man? You all right?
Well, Bin Laden. No, not at all. But I was going to say, Bin Laden most likely died in December of 2001.
Yeah.
I know it's like half an hour ago, but I just wanted to put that out there.
No, it's cool. It's just, you know what? I just got involved in that because supposedly we just, had Al Zawahiri, killed again, right? This time with some
for
kind
the
of...
sixth time?
Yeah. I don't know. Is it fourth, sixth? I'm not sure, but, what was it? They used some sort of special drone, right? That was like, like something out of a horror movie, the drone. Did you see that special drone?
Yeah, that was like Skynet stuff.
It was like Skynet has now decided we're going to go with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre model. I mean, that's almost what it was, right? Doesn't that thing have like a buzzsaw on it or something?
Yeah. It did, yeah. That some of those, even for private citizens, they can get the ones that have like the blades that are turning all the time. It's kind of creepy.
Okay, I did not know that you could buy those like over the counter. Can you?
Yeah, maybe not now, but they did for a little while, and it was like they were encouraging people to buy that stuff, mess up their neighbors or something. You know?
I don't know. People were dangerous enough with cameras on those things. Although, so I'm not sure if my YouTube channel's been deleted today yet or not, but they have.
It hasn't, no.
Okay.
You're still up there every day. Yep.
That's cool, but on there, if you go to the Nutshell documentary, there's drone footage, actually, of fireworks over Asbury Park really fast at the beginning. But it's... that's neat stuff, man. You know, like, literally being able to send a drone up to, you know, photograph fireworks up close, kind of cool footage, I thought.
Yeah.
You know, but...
do you remember during the pandemic that Amazon had a plan? Is what they were going to do was they were going to make deliveries only with drones, like, all over the country, and then that quietly went away.
Well, you know what's funny about that is I saw those drones and everything before that, before the pandemic, and then we saw a whole bunch of, like, well, now that we have the pandemic, isn't this a great idea? And even, what was it, either Domino's or, I think it was Domino's, came out with the self-driving pizza delivery car too, right? Which has a little, an oven on it. And I'm going, okay.
30 minutes or less, or they'll run you over.
Yeah, well, it's like these guys did not just come up with this, you know. Oh, pandemic response, no. 30 days later? No. You guys had this in mind.
But the Patriot Act was written in a month, right, Chuck?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, you can write an entire book in a month, can't you? Because most of these acts of Congress are like book length. I don't know if people understand that because some people seem to think that it's like like the Schoolhouse Rock thing where it's, you know, hey, I'm a bill, right? The dude is sitting there. He looks like he's two rolled up pieces of paper animated. And he's like, hey, I'm a bill. I could become a law. And it's like, dude, if like the Obamacare Act, if you printed it out on paper, was like taller than me in book form.
Because they don't want people reading it. It's like the Warren Commission. They don't want people actually diving into that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's the funniest part about it. I mean, you got to give credit to Michael Moore when it comes to that, because that was the first time I ever saw a congressperson admit that on film. Is that, remember he's sitting there, he's talking to that one, I don't remember which congressperson it was, but he goes, well, you mean to tell me you guys didn't even read this? And, you know, Michael Moore asked that question. He goes, sit down, my son.
He goes, well, let me tell you, child. He's like this elderly black gentleman. Yeah, I remember.
We don't read any of them. It was like, whoa, wow.
They passed that at, like, after midnight, I think, when no one was there.
Well, but that's the thing is, I mean, look, logistical, realistic problem. If you were a congressperson, right, Chris, can you read a book a day with all these laws? Yeah. And by the way, you know, as of subsection 3 and as to the parties in, you know, paragraph B of subsection 89-12, you're going to fall asleep even trying to read that. And it's book length, at least, all of this stuff, you know?
It's like Dan Aykroyd in Dragnet. Yeah, he's all by the book.
Yeah, by the book. Well, try and read it. It's impossible. Yeah. I don't know anybody who can read as much as you would have to like read every single thing that crosses your desk. So then, of course, the logical argument is, well, they have staff, right? So their staff, they just break it up, and you have the young staffers read through it, and then they give a summary. And indeed, you can find in some congressional papers later that they had staffers giving them summaries about laws, but do you think they covered everything? You know, I mean, do you think that they covered...
Not at all.
No. So, you know, it makes you wonder if things have to be written in this level of complexity, right? How is it that anybody's going to execute or enforce these things? That's always another problem.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, okay. So when people come down with this, oh, this is a very simple thing. The law boils down to this. I always like... My head just starts shaking as if I've got, you know, an issue. I mean, I almost made fun of a Congress lady right there. I'm going to leave that alone. But there's a Congress lady.
Almost went Michael J. Fox there, buddy.
Almost did that. Yes. You know, I'm not going to do the Family Guy thing where, you know, hey, did you ever see when they cast him in Zorro? Okay.
I was thinking like the Rush Limbaugh thing where he was being a jerk.
Well, you know, Rush Limbaugh, alright. Anyway, that guy always cracked me up because he, you know, I actually listened to him a lot early when he was, you know, first spreading the EIB network around, right? And he was doing the homeless updates and the spotted owl updates and all that stuff.
And then when he got an invite to the White House, he changed his tune.
Well, no. I don't think he changed then. He changed long before then because he had that whole issue where he was doctor shopping. And, you know, it was funny because he was so judgmental and like, you know, oh, drug addicts don't really matter and they're just a problem. And, you know, we just need to deal with them, put them in prison and until he got busted.
So then why didn't he arrest himself?
Yeah, right.
He was a pill popper.
Well, but that's the thing, is that he was doing that simultaneously. He's hooked on Oxycontin. And, you know, he's like, I've got one half of my brain tied behind my back. Yeah, but the other half is high from the Oxy, dude. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I don't blame him. I'm just saying,
they're,
you know.
All hypocrites, Chuck.
Right. That's the thing that bothers. Like, you know what? You want to get high, get high. Don't be a hypocrite about it.
Like the anti-gay people, you know, in these roles where they're in the bathroom stalls at the airports. Like, give me a break.
Oh, the worst. Yeah, like the worst, most extreme. Like they have to like create legislation to protect children from gays and everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And then you find
out. Yeah, that's their beard.
Yeah. Ay, ay, ay. I know. But that's the thing, is hypocrisy is the weirdest sort of. And that's the funny thing about a lot of this stuff with, like, I can't believe that people are attacking the FBI. Most of the people saying that were attacking the FBI not too long ago. And most of the people that are, now in, you know, who are attacking the FBI thought they were doing a good job when they were going after the right people. You know, it's like, I like the bully if it beats up on the nerd I want beaten up on. That's the thing, right? That's where they're coming at it from. And it's just,
it's like those JFK people, Chuck. You can back me up on this, right? It's like the JFK people when they're going after Trump there, and I'm not a fan of Trump at all. When they're going after Trump, then all of a sudden they believed in the institutions of the CIA and the FBI because they were going after Trump.
Well, that was weird.
Like, for years, they're like, they killed Kennedy. You know, it's like, what? Come on, man.
Well, and then the other thing, that the Contortion Act continued because, okay, they're going, all right, I'm glad the CIA and the FBI is going after Trump, although I don't trust them when it comes to Kennedy. All right, I get it. Different era. Sure, whatever. But now explain to me how it is you're mad about that. Or you're on board with that. Like, the Trump supporter JFK guy was the weirdest one to me because they were like, oh, look, he's about to dump, he's going to actually release the files. And I'm like, first of all, Clinton signed it.
Nope.
You know, Clinton created the ARRB after Bush signed it into law. And that's who actually set up these releases 25 years ago. You know what Trump has to do? Nothing.
Yeah.
And if Trump does nothing, and I was saying this, you know, like in the weeks before the release in 2017, I said, look, you know, he's got to do nothing. And if he does nothing, this stuff will tumble out. And I'm not even telling you, you know, hold your breath because the solution is coming. But he acquiesced just like everybody else. And then people went, Biden
blamed COVID.
Well, that's even better because Biden, you know, and then they went, oh, don't worry. Biden will let the stuff out now. And he does the same thing. And he goes, due to COVID, what was there, COVID 25 years ago? Because that's when this was actually put in motion. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, no, it is the system protecting itself. And these people are servants of the system.
Magic bullet, Chuck. He was laced with COVID.
Well, then I have a new theory to work on. If it was a COVID-laced magic bullet, I mean, you know, I've heard about these guys with the mercury rounds and all that, but COVID, that's where it came from. Okay, I get it now. See, it first emerged not in a lab in Wuhan, but it first emerged with the spray from JFK's head in Dealey Plaza. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, you're getting it now, my friend. Yes, it all began in Dallas.
See, but how? All right, I'm a little confused because.
And now he's going to go into it. Watch it, folks.
If it's I don't know if it's great or not. Is this a Jewish conspiracy? Because, you know, here we go.
It's the Vatican, Chuck. Come on.
All right. Now, look, I'm willing to go with the Jesuits on this, but the Jesuits and the Jews worked together to put COVID in the bullet? Is that about right?
Yeah. I think so.
Okay.
There was a lot of factors here.
All right. All right. You know what?
And they were flying the planes on 9/11, too.
Well, that might be... Listen, that makes perfect sense because there were dancing Israelis... You know, at...
I thought we weren't going to talk about that anymore.
No, no, I'm not talking about those dancing Israelis. I'm talking about the ones in Oklahoma City. See, this is where we're going to go. Yeah. See, you got to get in line.
They were outside of Waco, too.
Wow. Okay, now that I did not know. I did not know that they were anti-Koreshians.
That's what I'm saying.
Or maybe Koresh was a crisis actor.
Well, we won't go there because we get sued now.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. All right. I take that back. He was not a crisis actor. He was a fiction. He didn't exist in the first place. So there you go. He's actually now...
Well, that's the thing. Yeah.
He's actually now teaching yoga in Alabama, right? Okay. I got you. It's cool.
See, you're given certain security clearances, and now you're playing with it now. It's not funny.
All right. I'm sorry. So Chris, I'm trying to have fun with this, but I mean, it gets so convoluted. These ideas that, you know, it's like,
well, that's what I'm saying. The things that we're BSing about right now, it's like that's in the news every day. It seems like now.
Yeah, I know. And meanwhile, I don't know. You know, locally, that's not what it looks like. And does anybody have local news anywhere else anymore? I don't know. That's another weird thing.
They all have the same scripts, it seems like.
Yeah, well, look, again, when you have all these, you know, TV channels that are owned by, you know, the same five companies or whatever, because that's who owns everything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what else are you supposed to do? Nope. I mean, you don't want them writing 500 scripts.
They have to fill the air somehow, like Howard Stern used to say. I have about 5 hours to fill. So he starts talking about, you know, his small member or something, or his wife, you know? You got to fill the airwaves.
Oh, yeah. Howard Stern. I have not listened to Stern in some time.
All right, I won't cut you off again, buddy.
No, it's okay. No, it's fine. Listen, I don't even know what to really cover at this point. I know that earlier this week, and I'm going to try doing more 9/11 stuff, by the way.
I was going to say, congrats, brother. That was a great episode. I played that for a few people, and not too many people are doing that anymore. And that would be great if you started that back up again, because you got a whole library of that stuff on your website with the 9/11 witnesses and things.
Well, I got a few, but you know what? I think it's time for new looks at this stuff. I'm going to get in touch with John Gold. He's always been good about coming on the show. He's the guy who wrote We Were Lied To About 9/11, and his website is wewerelied2about911.com. Okay. I know I'm going to bring him on. I'm looking for, by the way, anybody wants to write to me and suggest guests, I've got somebody trying to get me to get Richard Gage on, which is funny because I only found out from Andy on the show that night that Richard Gage isn't with Architects and Engineers anymore. But Gage
well,
is...
Well, someone that we both know just had him on their show maybe 2 months ago.
Yeah, and, I produced it.
He's doing press. So.
I know. I produced that show. I produced...
No, this one was over on the other one with the video component.
Oh, no kidding. All right. Well, but I produced an audio show with Richard Gage on the Donald Jeffries show. It's still on the website. I took away Donald Jeffries' tag.
Okay.
I took away his tab, but if you search on the website for Donald Jeffries, you can find it. It's still there, and it's probably still on the feed.
Yeah.
So I know I produced, but I didn't even realize in that discussion, because Don, I don't think even asked him, he didn't even say anything about Architects and Engineers, and apparently, according to Andy, he hasn't been there for like a year.
Well, on the other one that I'm talking about, the video one, I think he apologized to him because he realized on air that, I didn't even realize that you were not a part of that anymore.
Oh, wow.
And he didn't seem that upset about it. So,
well, look, for 15 years, Richard Gage was like the main dude. He was the guy you wanted from Architects and Engineers, okay, if you were doing a show. So it makes perfect sense, but I've gotten some emails recently, people trying to convince me to put Gage on the show. I don't know what his particular change is, but I think we'll find out about that. But if people have other suggestions about active 9/11 researchers, filmmakers that I'm unaware of, I'm willing to admit I'm not in the loop at this point. Let me know, right?
Well, Chuck.
Yeah.
Chuck, can you, is there any way you can get a hold of April Gallup? Because I've been trying to find her for a while, and she was an important Pentagon witness, in my opinion.
I have a phone number for her in an old paper Rolodex, and I'm going to check and see if it's, if it's any good.
All right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I'll do what I can, but, yeah, I would love to talk to her.
She had that lawsuit against Cheney and all them, too, so that might have had an effect on her wanting to give interviews. That's why I was wondering if you might have some other way of getting a hold of her.
No, I'd love to, but what I'm saying is if listeners of this show know of somebody who is out there actively researching or speaking about 9/11, making films, doing, you know, podcasts, whatever, if somebody's out there actively working at it, send me information. Now, obviously, I had Andy on, so Architects and Engineers has been covered. I will, again, bring him on again another time after that podcast is out there for a while. I'll invite him anyway. I don't know if he can come on, but anyway, it seemed to go well. But if anybody has any other ideas, John Gold is somebody who I do just communicate with, so I'm going to bring him on and ask him about if he has any suggestions, and he always does. He's the guy who put me in touch with Bob McElveen. So, you know, and I was really happy to interview him. It is deeply disturbing to me. Yeah. Yeah, I had him on the show.
Oh, my God. He got railroaded with by Jones and Charlie Sheen and everything. They paraded him out there, then basically did their goofy stuff and, you know, kind of spit in the face of what Bob was trying to get accomplished. I felt so bad for Bob over the years.
Well, I didn't do anything. Listen, when I had him on, he was afterwards thanking me for being, like, respectful and kind to him and everything. So,
yeah,
you know, and that's the thing. It's like, you know what? Speak your story. Go. You know, do it. That's what I wanted from Bob, and that's what I got.
Yeah.
You know, so.
My heart goes out. I feel for the guy, you know. Plus, the way his son most likely died, too, is very controversial.
No, absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, if anybody has others, you know, I'd be more than happy. I mean, I used to have Rebecca Roth on the show a lot. I don't know what happened to her, if she's still out there.
You talked to her?
Yeah, I did a while back. I'm just pointing out some of what I've done.
Okay, no, I know. I know, I'm just saying, like, I did my research into Miss Roth, and I'll just say leave it at that.
No, listen, I'm not looking to bring her back. I'm just saying that I've done that. You know, and
then, yeah, no, it just caught me off guard because I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, look, when she first came out, she was on my show and stuff. But anyway, what I'm saying is I'm looking for, you know, good people. So if you guys have suggestions, and I'm open-minded about it, you know, I'm willing to talk to anybody who's rational, please, about it. Be more than happy, especially, I mean, look, of course, witnesses are best. If there are authors that you guys think I should have on, if they, have been on the show before, I'll be glad to have them on again. But I'm really trying, let's get this rolling some more, because it seems to me like it's been left out of the discussion for a while.
It's a forgotten issue.
Yeah. So.
It's a forgotten issue. Yeah. And right. It's a shame.
And, so I want to get back to you.
I have actually a firefighter witness that, was witness to a lot of these explosions that, I think I might have lined up soon myself, so.
Okay, but, his name's not Rudy, is it?
Rudy Giuliani? No.
No, not Rudy Giuliani, but not Rudy, right?
No.
Okay, fair enough. I would love to talk, you could interview him on your show. So before I get out of here for tonight, and by the way, I loved the last show. That was great. With, the guy who was, involved in a bunch of Nightmare on Elm Street, properties. His name is now escaping me at the moment, but, if I think about it a minute,
Nick Strawn.
That's it. He was, he was very entertaining, I thought. Anybody who was bored with the interview before that could not have been bored by Mick. Interesting guy. I enjoyed that. But what do you got coming up on Get Mad with Chris Graves?
Well, it's a possibility that someone from Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, which people would be really shocked by, I think. If,
nice.
Do you have any problems with Mr. Richard Belzer, by the way? I wanted to ask.
No, he's kind of on my wish list for people I'd love to interview personally. Yeah.
Because I'm in the process with his quote-unquote people right now, and it might actually happen. And same, and I tagged you with on Twitter. Kevin Smith agreed to do it. He just can't do it this Sunday. So,
well, look, those are two guys right there that I might break the streak of. I have not appeared on your show to ask a question yet or anything. But I might ask
you. I know how much you love that, Chuck.
I don't usually do that, but I you know, because you well know I try not to show up on anybody's show if I can avoid it. But except for Aaron's, a different situation. But I might ask your permission to come on and just ask a question or two. If you get
no
those
permission
two guys.
Needed, dude. You give me a platform every week, so
yeah, but it's your show. It's your show. I definitely don't want to mess with it. I love the way it's going, but you know, for Kevin Smith and also for Richard Belzer, those would be two guys I'd be like, can I just ask one question? So, because I'd love to interview both of those guys.
Well,
myself.
The other one is Betty Aberlin from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. She was famous about doing that Robert Kennedy thing on that show to talk to the kids. Remember, I don't know if you remember, but back in the day when Mr. Rogers was on in the late 60s, she explained to the kids or whatever right into camera about what assassination meant and everything. And she was also almost cast in Night of the Living Dead, but didn't even know it because I guess since George Romero, the director, worked on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, as did Michael Keaton, and she has some stories about Michael Keaton, too. I guess Fred Rogers talked George Romero out of it, so I'd like her to tell that story, too.
Well, Fred Rogers is a weird character to begin with because, you know, there are people that have over the years tried to convince me that he was a special forces guy.
A sniper in Vietnam?
Yeah, like a special forces assassin and all. And I'm like, all right, I'd have to see something verifiable to go with that. But that's been a long-standing, like, internet rumor and stuff that he was, like, special forces, like, brutal guy.
Yeah, he wore the sweaters to cover up his tattoos because it signified how many kills he had. Yeah, no, it's a real juicy urban legend of the internet age. I don't buy into it personally.
No, me neither. Look, from what I can tell, it is completely made up. There may indeed be a Fred Rogers who is that kind of guy, but it's not the same guy that did the TV show. That's what I.
But I will say, Julia
with,
Child was a spy in World War II, and she actually created shark repellent. That's on record. So I don't know.
That shark repellent thing is weird, because you know they did a whole documentary.
Yeah.
They just did a whole documentary on her on CNN, I think, about Julia Child.
Yeah.
Like, and they tell a lot of stuff about her there, but I didn't. I don't know if they had that, you know, because I didn't watch the whole thing honestly, but. But at the same time,
she was almost on one of the planes coming out of Boston on 9/11 too. A lot of people don't know that either.
Oh boy! Well, you know what? We're gonna spare everybody the Seth MacFarlane discussion then. So we'll just.
Oh, speaking of which, are we still doing that tomorrow night? Please don't tell me I got my hopes up the Sandy Hook thing, because I'm not gonna get into hoaxes and stuff. But there's some legitimate things I'd like to see what other people think.
No, as far as I know, that is the plan for tomorrow night. That's the last thing I was going to say, actually, on the show. Thank you for setting it up. Is that tomorrow night on the open mic night on Friday here, we're going to go through the Sandy Hook questions, okay, that one particular individual had out there for a bit, and see what we can do with them. And it's going to be an open roundtable, so you might want to join us tomorrow night and go through the Sandy Hook discussion. okay? And no, I'm not a Sandy Hook guy.
Maybe some people can change my mind on certain things, too, because I actually want to learn. I don't want to just spout out stuff that I've learned over the years. I want to see what other people's legitimate things are. It's not about arguing for me,
no,
personally.
I'm not looking to argue either. I just I would like to definitively go through these things, though, and talk about what can be known and so on, and see what
maybe
we can come up with.
Maybe we can put them to bed, you know?
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we'll put some of this stuff to bed, and then I will shut up about it forever.
There you have it. Hey, listen, I never make that promise because I run my mouth too much, as anybody who listens to this show knows. Anyways, Chris, I appreciate you calling in. I appreciate all you guys for listening, because after all, I am merely Ocelli, and all of you are indeed the effect. Good night.